Opening next Wednesday, February 2nd at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Gallery will be an exhibit by Brian Marse and Stephen Immerman. Stephen Immerman is a resident of Eau Claire and has been working with Art Glass for many years. Since we last talked with Stephen Immerman on Spectrum West, his Art Glass has changed, and we've invited him to join us on Spectrum West to talk about his work and his upcoming exhibit. Stephen, before we talk about how your work has changed over time, first of all, let's talk about the kind of art glass you create. Now, is the proper term for your work kiln-formed glass, and what kinds of art glass are there?
Well, kiln-formed glass is one term. Glass fusing is another that people use, or even just kiln glass. And the basic types of processes for working with art glass are glass blowing, which is the most common, and most glasses and bowls and platters are made by glass blowing techniques. There's also torch work or lamp work techniques, where you use a torch, you use rods of glass, and you put things together that way. That's the type of thing maybe you'll see in the mall where somebody's making figurines with a torch and rods of glass. Cast glass is another way of working with glass, where you make a mold and you pour molten glass into the mold. It then hardens, and then maybe you polish it and do other things to the surface. Kiln glass is done in a kiln, and it was one of the oldest ways that glass was manipulated and worked with, but then it immediately fell by the wayside when techniques of glass blowing were discovered, because glass blowing is a much more efficient and a much better way for actually working with glass. It has come back as an art form, but only since the early 80s, because before then, there were no companies that actually made glass that would work well with fusing or with kiln glass, because one sheet of glass was not necessarily compatible with another. Bullseye Glass Company in Portland, Oregon, at a challenge by a glass artist, came up with a line of compatible glass for fusing. Now, there were three companies that coincidentally are all in Portland, Oregon, Spectrum Glass and Uroboros Glass, and they all now make glass that can be used for fusing. And so this has had sort of a renaissance now of new kiln workers in the last 20 years trying to come up with new techniques and new ideas, but it's an art form that's really in its infancy.
When we talked about your work a couple of years ago on Spectrum West, you were creating beautiful bowls and coasters and decorative pieces as well, but now your work has evolved. Tell us about the change that has occurred in your work.
Well, you know, as the years have gone by, I've taken classes and I've had colleagues that we've talked about things, and you start learning new techniques. And after a while, certain techniques just seem to fit well with an individual, and you go off in a direction working with that technique. My stuff has gotten bigger, it's gotten thicker, it's gotten more complex, and I've done more what we call cold working to the pieces. This is work that's then done on the glass after it comes out of the kiln, which can include sandblasting, grinding, polishing, smoothing, etc., to add a whole nother dimension to these pieces.
Well, one of the things that I found astounding when looking at your work is that you can take hundreds of small pieces, I mean, we're talking hundreds here, and put them into intricate, very clean lines and into a fairly small piece. How do you do that?
Well, I'm thinking often more in terms of patterns rather than design, and then the patterns come together for the design. And so the pattern or the texture can be made up of many small pieces, and I build it very much like a mosaic. And so if you stand back, you'll be seeing a pattern. And indeed, some of my pieces have hundreds, some even thousands of just small pieces of fairly precisely cut pieces of glass fit together like a mosaic. The hard part is actually making it look nice, because you can make it look too busy, too wild, and not have any focus. And not every piece is successful.
Well, I know you've taken some of your inspirations have been your trips to the seashore, or, you know, I think I saw a piece where there was a zebra in it. And how do you take it from those inspirations and then take all these complex patterns and then make them into a cohesive whole? How do you do that?
Well, I don't exactly know how, but what I'll often do is lay photos out in front of me, and I'll start grabbing different colors of glass. And although there is a fairly large palette, it's a limited palette. And so you might want a certain yellow, and it just doesn't exist.
Because they just don't make that glass.
They just don't make that color. Mm. But you know, I'll look at the textures and the patterns and the colors and try and put them together into the piece so that someone else looking at it but not having the pictures in front of them might understand where I was coming from. And some things are fairly easy. If it has sort of a, you know, marine colors, people can easily see that it has something to do with water or ocean or marine life. Some of them are a little more obscure. If I lay the pictures down next to the piece, then a lot of times it's very easy to see where I was coming from and where I was going. But it's really fun. I did one piece that was basically, I had an array of pictures of polar bears sitting on the ice in the turquoise water, and ended up with a piece that was kind of white and off-white and turquoise, and had some very tiny sandblasted polar bear designs in them. In the piece, but without that, many people looked at it and said, well, I didn't even see the little polar bears, but I knew it had to do with cold and ice and Arctic and winter, and mm-hmm. So they got the message. Mm-hmm. And so that some of these are very successful. Some of them are just whimsical and fun and really aren't based on any photo or any idea. They're just mostly colors, because the colors are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But some of them, it's really fun to try and get a feeling from photography, which is another one of my interests.
When you and I have talked before this interview, you mentioned that you're doing aperture pours. Now, would you explain what that means?
Well, an aperture pour is kind of a way, by using a kiln, to start getting some of the flowing textures that you would get with glass blowing. With glass blowing, you can take a big blob of molten glass out of a crucible at the end of a punty rod, and you can swirl it and move it around and get designs. In the kiln, we don't really like to reach into the kiln and do much manipulating. So that if you can set things up in the kiln so the glass will flow and mix together, then let it cool, then take it out, and then use that design, you can get some interesting effects. An aperture pour, you basically take a container of some sort that won't burn up in the kiln, and a clay pot is a good crucible to use, with a hole in the bottom. You fill the pot up with glass, and you lay it out in a certain way, and you pick certain colors. You put it in the kiln up on suspended up on legs of some sort, so it's raised above the shelf, and you let it melt and start pouring through the hole in the bottom of the pot. And a round hole gives you a different effect than a rectangular hole. If there's something in between the flower pot and the kiln shelf to interrupt the flow, it'll give you swirling effects that you might not get otherwise. How you choose your colors will make, and so I can get some very interesting patterns that I will then cut up and then use in my pieces as elements in a mosaic.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is that you have these pores that seem to have movement. It sort of gives a sense of dynamic to your pieces, and then you have these very intricate patterns.
Yeah, I really like the juxtaposition of the chaotic flowing areas with the fairly rigid soldier course of border or background. It's just how to do it so that it actually looks pleasing. Mm-hmm. That's difficult.
Well, you've accomplished that, and other people have recognized this as well. You've been noted in some major glass art associations. Is that
well? Actually, there was a competition this year. They have it every year or two at the Bullseye Glass Company, where they invite people just working in kiln glass to submit pieces for a gallery display and a competition. And this year, the competition was very stiff because there were many, many entries, and they have a new gallery that's not very big, so they could not take very many. So I got a piece selected for this show, but they only selected 35 pieces out of 516 entries. So it was very difficult to get in, and I was really very honored to be there. And so my piece was on display at their gallery during the month of October and November. And also, the Pilchuck Glass School has an annual fundraising auction, and they have artists submit pieces to the auction. If they're accepted into the auction, then they're sold and the money goes to the glass school. And I had a piece in that this year, which was also difficult to get pieces in. Mm-hmm. So a couple of exciting things have happened this year.
That is indeed. Congratulations on that. And people can see your work this coming month at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center Gallery. And your work's going to be there from February the 2nd. Through March 1st. What all will you have there?
I think I'll have a couple of dozen pieces, actually. Oh. A few bowls, a lot of large decorative sushi platters, some sculptural pieces in stands, some plates, bowls, I mean, all different types of things.
Now, there's also going to be a Meet the Artist reception at the center. When is that going to be?
That's going to be on Sunday, February 13th in the afternoon from 2 to 5.
Okay.
So everyone's welcome.
And people can come and see your work and then have a chance to talk with you personally about your work. Stephen Immerman, thank you so much for joining us on Spectrum West, and we look forward to seeing your exhibit.
Thank you.